souls, we love you. Sending love from skies of blue. To heal your wounds and ease your pain. For Mother Earth, some healing rain. This is Jeff Phillips Wilferson. Welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 307. I'm coming at you from Nelson, New Zealand, and I apologize for a bit of traffic noise in the background. I'm on the edge of town with the doors and windows open to be close to Mother Earth and nature and my family of life, but there's traffic Saturday afternoon. I'm here with my beautiful Kaitiaki family, Teddy Wally, Ruby Ann, Big Teddy, Heidi, Felicity, Huckleberry, Ellie, and Peter Platypus, and Kylie Koala. They're here with me. They've been on the show quite a few times along. We normally do our interviews beneath Grandmother Pahutukawa on Great Barrier Island, but we're doing this now. They wanted to come on in honor of all the our family of life that's under such horrific circumstances in Australia. So many have been killed and lying there in pain and agony, screaming and burning up right now and being treated by veterinarians, and it's just an ecological holocaust, and that's what this show is dedicated to. It's called Calling All Kingdoms, all the kingdoms of life. We're calling on all the kingdoms of life to try to apologize, I am, for on behalf of what my species has been doing to you for so long, and all my Kaitiakis are going to give us a word of what they think and feel about all this, and also we're going to try to dial into and have a communication with some of the life forms in Australia, like maybe some koalas and some kangaroos and maybe some wombats and maybe the platypus we saw in Deloraine. But family, how are you?
Oh, Wavy Ops, this is so beautiful to be here. We just can't believe how horrific it is in Australia. It's mind-boggling.
I know this has been a gut-wrenching past couple of weeks for me. I've shed so many tears and felt feelings unlike anything I've felt since my mom and dad got killed in the car wreck in 2004.
Well, Webhips, we know exactly what you mean because we feel the feelings of all our families of life that's been burned up and hurt and killed in every way.
Well, exactly. This is kind of like a dominant theme of all my work in recent years and decades.
Yes, especially with the whales and dolphins because of how much we love them and how special they are.
Yes, exactly. And they're helping us understand everything that's going on. And, you know, I'd like to thank all the people on my mailing list who have refused to read my recent blog post that's got one of the lowest open rates ever, only about 8%, as opposed to the one the week before that was asking for prayers for rain for Australia. It got over 30% opening. So far, my one about Australia under fire, environmental warfare, and the climate change deception, practically less than 100 people have looked at that. But I've reached some very key people, and I'd really like to thank a man named William Engdahl. That's E-N-G-D-A-H-L. He is, to me, the absolute highest level of investigative researcher in terms of his ability to have determined what it is that's really going on in the world behind the scenes and who is behind all this and what they're actually doing. And he's written several very important landmark books. Some of the early ones were about the oil and the military and the government and the banking families. And then he wrote books about full spectrum dominance, the whole approach to the post 9/11 U.S. military paradigm. And then he has a book called The Gods of Money. And he has his most powerful book is called Seeds of Destruction. Not so much that it's about an expose of what genetic engineering actually is as a weapon of depopulation, but his chapter called The Brotherhood of Death, which I cite that so often because he goes into specific scientific researchers who were doing murderous, diabolical stuff on behalf of families like the Rockefellers and stuff like that directly on their payroll. And so I use that when people say, but Jeff, who would do this kind of thing? Even once they accept the fact that what we're seeing in Australia is not being done by carbon dioxide or climate change or anything like that. It is a fully blown high-tech warfare operation that's going on, and it's continent-wide. It's unlike anything we've seen. It's got historical precedents that I've talked about, but it's unlike anything we've seen. It's ongoing. It's burning up right now, and we're trying to honor the kingdoms of life, including people, which would be the mammals. But I sort of, as much as I love my fellow man, I kind of shy away from putting too much emphasis on us now, because we're the problem. We've elevated ourselves to the pinnacle of the evolutionary ladder in our own mind. And we've been doing this for several thousands of years. So it's like, to me, this is a theme that I've repeated many, 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 many times. We have a collective dementia. We have a species megalomania that permeates our entire civilized mentality. And our separation from nature, which is really only in our mind, but in our actions, not our nature. Now, regardless of the different sort of reasons, like if you look at Judeo-Christianity, you've got this thing called the fall, when we were expelled from the Garden of Eden and all that stuff. Well, it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for the Kali Yuga, which is like a Hindu cyclical worldview, kind of like seasons of a galactic year or cycle, where life sort of goes through different kind of phases. And I think that I'm starting to understand through my astronomical research with comet researchers and people looking at sort of galactic level variations, that it's actually the passage, the movement of our sun, our solar system, and us through different parts of the galaxy. And as these sort of large, they're sort of, as we dip in and out of the plane of the galaxy, and you can look at long-term spikes in what we believe to be the glaciation cycles of the Earth. There's a regular period that varies for hundreds of thousands of years, but it's very regular. This is according to ice core samples. This looks a lot like the same kind of periodic episodic bombardment that happens with waves of comets and things as the Earth passes through, the solar system passes through these different regions of stuff that's out there. But regardless of what these drivers are, and these would be related to the long-term drivers of the expression climate change that's so big in the world now. What we hear of climate change really has nothing to do with that at all. It's not about real climate change, which happens so slowly that we can't perceive it even in a human lifetime. And I really like to thank the whales and dolphins for always being with us and with me, for their real-time inspiration right now that's guided me and helped me to sort of understand everything that's going on. But I really want to thank William Engdahl, because I've been in touch with him for many years. He gave me permission to post excerpts from the Brotherhood of Death 10 years ago. And he just emailed me today to thank me for my investigative work uncovering this big picture of what's really going on. And he said it's that I've actually laid it all on the line in a very clear way, but that it's quite terrifying. But just the fact that he's acknowledged my contribution, reaching him, I don't care if anybody else at all even read my email, if William Engdahl has read it. And actually, he set a record for how many times he's opened the email to read it, 37 times. So that means he's actually really taking it in. And he writes for Global Research, as does Nick Begich, as does Dr. Claudia von Werloff, and a lot of other top-rated investigative people. So I'm hoping that Michael Chashadovsky might consider publishing something of mine here for the first time. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about honoring my family of life, including Mother Earth, Gaia. And we're hoping that she might drop in on us. And I think,
that's Grandmother Pahutakawa. Jeffrey, this is Grandmother Pahutakawa talking to you from Great Barrier Island, Aotea. How are you?
Grandmother Pahutakawa, oh my God. I'm so glad to hear from you. We were going to try to contact you, but we wish we could be there now.
Oh, well, Jeffrey, you really don't
don't want to be here now because it's so hot and dry and windy, and we're all a bit thirsty for some rain, and the sky was a really weird orange color last week, and it's not a good time for you to be here.
Well, if I was there, maybe I could bring some rain, because I have a connection with rain, and actually, we got it, asked rain to come at Mount Yango a few months ago, and it did. And if I could just get back in there.
Well, Jeffrey, we love you, and it's all going to be okay eventually, but Mother Earth, as we've talked about before, she's going to have to take some major steps to get rid of human industrial civilization because it's such a threat to all of life on the planet.
Yes, I've tried to talk about that so many times, the Hopi prophecy and the Day of Purification.
We know what Thomas Bianca said.
Yes, exactly. He talked about how that there's no way we can hope to avert the Day of Purification because it's got to come. It's come three times before to take out thousands of years of military-industrial civilization that's been founded on waging war on Mother Earth and life all along, and now it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And with this recent attack in Australia, it's a continent-wide blitzkrieg against a defenseless place and life forms that's just lying there and waging war. And it's literally like ecocidal depopulation exercise against all the life forms of southeastern Australia.
Webbyups, we know that, and we can't believe so many koalas have burned up, and kangaroos and wallabies and all the kingdoms of life.
Oh, and Jeffrey, this is Grandmother Buddha Galligan, and all the trees, even though the eucalyptus trees like the heat and reborn and stuff, but much of the soil has been burned so badly that a lot of the microbes and critters down in there might be harmed, and it might decrease the fertility of the soil and its ability to regenerate.
It is so horrific. And the really horrific part is A, that so many people believe this is due to climate change, and B, the fact that it is being done directly as an act of war by people using advanced technologies of mind control and geophysical warfare to wage war that looks like it was done by nature, but it's not. Is it real or is it Memorex? Well, this is definitely Memorex. But this show is about honoring our family of life and trying to send healing and blessings and acknowledge everybody that's in such pain and suffering. And I'd really like to thank all the beautiful people working with the animals there, all the animal veterinarians that are working with all the koalas and all the doctors and the medical people and all the firefighters that are rescuing the animals and stuff. And we've seen many, many, many images of koalas coming up and drinking water and being rescued by firefighters, and many, many, many horrific images of kangaroos running from fires and getting caught in barbed wire fences and burning to death, and whole herds of kangaroos laying by the roadside dead, and sheep and animals, and all this. Just it's like scenes from Dresden, the firebombing of Germany, or scenes from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It is truly the war on life. And like Chief Seattle said, what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. And this is exactly what's happening. But it's not a metaphor. We're doing it to ourselves. And we can point fingers at all these organizations who are the actual masterminds and perpetrators of this stuff, like Booz Allen Hamilton, the Rockefeller family, the U.S. and Australian governments, the U.S. and Australian militaries, corporations like Raytheon, Lockheed, BAE Systems, all these think tanks, and the Club of Rome, and the bankers, and Goldman Sachs is probably in there too. It doesn't matter, but we can point fingers and name names. The U.S. Navy, the greatest threat to whales and dolphins. We can name names, but ultimately, from the perspective of Mother Earth, it's all of us, all of humans, that are responsible for what all of our species is doing. And everybody except people. I mean, we have a hard enough time understanding what each other is saying, even when we speak the same language. Humans talking to each other that don't speak the same language have huge barriers, but a degree of translation is possible a lot of the time. But to try to communicate with or be understood by or hear the voice of non-human life forms even though, like, marsupials aren't really known for their sounds all that much, but birds are, and insects are, but to try to understand what they're saying, they don't, our language is just like, may as well be farting to them. They don't understand what we mean. All they know us through the direct results, the fruits of our actions or inactions. They know us from coming in there with a bulldozer and a chainsaw and a flamethrower and chopping down their forest and burning it up and torching them and digging up their habitats and draining all their water supplies. And this is how they know us. They know us as man the wise, of course. So we'd like to honor all the kingdoms of life. And I'm going to start by talking with Kylie Koala. Kylie, how are you? You're one of our newest members of our little family here.
Jeffrey, I'm so happy to be here with you. You found me in Apollo Bay a few months ago along with Peter Platypus. And we just love being with you. But oh my God, I can't believe how many koalas has been in pain and suffering.
And Teddy, you're part koala too.
Yes, yes, Teddy. Oh, this is Teddy. I'm our koala bear. And I'm, even though I've got a, not a bear, I've got all the qualifications. But I'm your oldest critter, and we want to ask Lisbon Verstraten to please send love for us with Freddie and Snooja and all her other family, because she used to love life with us, with the whales and dolphins and everybody all the time.
I know. I miss Lisbon and all our 5 years of ultimate creative partnership journey all over Australia, all over Tasmania, playing our flute and painting our rocks and swimming with dolphins and climbing mountains and photographing nature and making films and making medicine wheels and traveling everywhere. And I really wish she would be in touch, and I hope that she's safe from the fires and trying to rally all her creativity in every possible way. But all the koalas, I'd like to thank my friend Allie B. on Magnetic Island for her beautiful work with the koalas there. And it's ironic that in Apollo Bay, oh, I guess it was back in October, I saw more koalas in a month than I saw in like the previous 19 years of traveling all over Australia. There was heaps of them in the trees there. They would just come right down. One came down out of the tree in my friend Gail Palmer's backyard. And it was only a couple of meters from me, and he just went... He looked at me and let me get some good photos, and then he went straight up this other tree where there was a female. But I've got some really good recordings of their sounds that they make in the night. Oh my God, they're quite scary. If you don't know what it is, you could be quite terrified. But they're probably one of the loudest sounds that any marsupial makes. Like, I've heard kangaroos make kind of little chirping and grunting noises and coughs and stuff like that. But as far as I know, wallabies might make a few little, you know, kind of subtle little sounds and stuff, but probably they all make tiny little sounds, but you don't really hear. Well, I don't know if a platypus makes any kind of sound, or wombats might. They probably all have like little growls and grunts and little chirps and chortles and different kind of things. You'd have to be very close to them. It's not like something you hear, like the loud projectile. I guess it's a mating call or a territorial assertion of the male koalas. I don't know if the females do it too, but. I don't know if quokkas make any sound, or if I know that thylacines make a sound like yip, 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 yip. My friend Craig Garland demonstrated that sound. We're hopefully going to come close to some when we go back to Tasmania in March. That's going to be fantastic. But and the Tasmanian devils, they kind of make some kind of screeches and screams and things, I think, but I don't think they're being too much affected right now. It's mainly the koalas or probably the marsupials that are being the hardest hit. But and the kangaroos, but they can run a lot faster. The koalas, koalas and wombats are the slower of the marsupials, but when they run into a fence, like when we were at Malcolm Hartley's property at Coonabarabran, where they got burned by fires in 2013 up in at the warm bungles, he said they found kangaroos that had run into fences and got trapped by the fire. So it's, you know, it's those fences. It's another problem of something that people have done. But all the koalas. And Kylie?
Well, yes, we're sending our beautiful prayers for all the koalas.
And Teddy?
Oh, Jeffrey, it makes me want to cry.
I know, I have a lot. And Peter Platypus?
Jeffrey, I think all our platypus is all right. I don't think any platypus has died because of the fires, because they've been able to be down in the water. But we feel for everybody else.
You're lucky to be an aquatic marsupial. You're probably the only one, as far as I know. And the echidnas, some of them probably got burned up too. But maybe they could burrow down into the ground. Oh my God. Well, what about the bird kingdom?
We
don't have any birds in our Kaitiaki family, but we love them.
What about the white cockatoos and the black cockatoos and the rosellas, the crimson rosellas and the lorikeets and the galahs and the gorillas and eagles and the emus and the butcher birds and the bower birds and the honey eaters?
Yes, all our very favorite birds. And we saw black cockatoos many times up close, like in Tasmania earlier in the year, and then up at Mount Yango, and all around in the Central Coast and Gosford. And their sounds are so beautiful, and hopefully they've been able to fly out of the way. But you just never know what's been able to overtake everybody. Now, family, what about the reptiles?
Oh my God!
Well, remember when Craig and I went to Mount Yango, we saw that big goanna going up the tree. Both times we went, we saw one climbing the tree. First of all, a big one about a meter long ran across the road and ran up the tree, and I got some good pictures of him. And then when we just went last time, another one came up the tree, and he kind of went around the tree so we couldn't see him. And then there was that other lizard, kind of like a blue-tongued lizard, or I'm not sure exactly what he was, but he was kind of gnarly looking. But he was in the road, right in the road, in the dirt road in front of us. And so we stopped and looked at him, and I didn't try to pick him up, but I touched his tail to try to get him to move out of the way, and then he ran off out across the woods. But hopefully, not too many reptiles have got burned up, but there was a species of snake that Terry Lilly, our marine biologist from Kauai, species of, because he used to breed Australian reptiles, and he had a species of snake that he found only exists in Australia. I think it's called a wamba or something like that. We'll put a picture on there, but we hope all the reptiles, all the little skinks and all the lizards and all the different kinds of snakes. Up on Mount Yangu, we also saw a king brown snake came right in front of us. Craig and I were coming down from walking up on the mountain, and a brown snake about a meter long came in between me and Craig and just crossed the path, and it was just on its way, but it was just right there. It was such an honor to see him. Now,
amphibians. What about all the amphibians?
Yes, this is Grandmother Buddha going in. The amphibians are especially might be able to handle the fires to a degree because they can burrow down in the mud.
Yes, now turtles are reptiles, but they might be able to burrow down in mud and save themselves from the flames. But again, the whole thing with these fires is that they've been different. And that with the speed and ferocity at which that they've moved and burned things up. And so it might have damaged life forms in a way that the kind of fires they're used to didn't or doesn't, because of the intensity and how fast it overtook them and stuff. They may not have had time to get out of the way. But with the amphibians, Australia's got millions of frogs that you can just hear anywhere there's bodies of water. Unlike New Zealand, there's very few frogs that you hear around here. And also you've got your geckos. They're more up in the tropics, but they're all over Australia, wherever it's warm. You've got the salamanders. You've got the giant prehistoric salamander called Coolosuchus. Now, he's been gone for a long time, but there may be some still lurking down in there, along with the trilobites, down in some of those remote coastal wetland areas in Kadubanud country there near Apollo Bay. But we hope all the amphibians are all right. And now all the insects have probably suffered a lot because they're just on a smaller scale. They don't have the ability to go all that far that fast. And so I feel so horrifically sad for all the bugs that have got burned up, all the ants and the mosquitoes and the butterflies and the dragonflies and the flies and the beetles and the ladybirds and just everybody. And also all the arthropods, the arachnids, the spiders and the praying mantises and even the ticks and stuff like that. They're all God's creatures. But when you add up these ecologists at the University of Sydney were trying to put numbers on the amount of animals that have been killed, and they were saying 480 million, but now they're saying more than a billion. Well, I mean, really, how could anyone possibly know, even remotely? I mean, putting a number on it is just like saying, it's not that much different from saying just like there was an astronomical number of them killed. But the numbers aren't important. It's the magnitude of this destruction. Now, in the plant kingdom,
Wavy Up says Grandmother Buddha Cow again. Yes, the plant kingdom is... it's very anomalous what's happened with these fires.
Well, yes, because just like in California, we've seen sites where a house was just leveled to ash, but something made of plastic in it might have been fine or sitting there untouched. And then also a house leveled to ash, but shrubbery, trees and bushes and stuff right next to it, not even harmed. And so ordinary fire does not do that.
No, not at all, Wavyups. That's one of the smoking guns of the geophysical warfare thing.
Yes, and that's what I've been trying to talk about. But so many of the varieties of eucalyptus trees actually thrive on fire and are able to regenerate after fire, and we've seen photos of new shoots and stuff coming out already. But also some scientists are saying, like I was saying before, that the soil microbes might have been damaged because of the heat, and it might make it harder for life forms to regenerate and might damage the soil dwelling, all the microbes in the soil and the fungi and the lichens. I mean, but ultimately, this is kind of like, it's got historical precedence. It calls to mind not only man-made apocalyptic disasters like Dresden and Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but also planetary cataclysms that life on Earth has lived through numerous times, where almost everybody would have got burned up, frozen to death, dried up, irradiated with radiation, poisoned with smoke and chemicals, and even blasted by impacts, this kind of thing, and drowned with floods. This has happened many, many, many times, either part of the purifications that the Earth has experienced during human occupation and or the events leading up to several of the what we call the mass extinction events that are on a completely different time scale than that. So this is both the Australian under fire apocalyptic disaster scenario unfolding right now is both indicative of these self-inflicted wounds that mankind repeatedly inflicts and is doing so even more leading up to the Atlantean discontinuity, but also echoes of planetary level catastrophic events that have happened before that Emmanuel Wielichowski calls cataclysmic evolution, that have sort of reset the whole DNA genetic expression of life and setting the stage for Mother Earth and the consciousness of water-based life herself to regenerate and renew and come out with whole new life forms or provide niches for things that were only marginally existing before, but we don't really know. And sure, all these things are part of nature, except for what we're doing, the karma that our species is accruing from deliberately doing this kind of thing, either deliberately as a side effect of military-industrial civilization or strategically premeditated ecocide and genocide done by geophysical warfare, as is clear in Australia, clear as a bell. If you don't believe me, ask William Engdahl. He's probably the most highly respected and credible investigative researcher out there in the whole world that I know about. Wielichowski talks about in his book Mankind in Amnesia, he talks about how the rulers of ancient societies, their highest goal was to emulate the gods. That's exactly what we're doing. We're trying to emulate the gods. The gods being the cosmic forces that have destroyed us and wrought havoc on the earth and on humanity so many times. Forces far greater than us, completely beyond our control. So we're trying to emulate that with the atomic bomb, and now with all these laser weapons and HARP and the microwave ionospheric heaters and all this, creating earthquakes and fires and tsunamis and floods and all this stuff, controlling the weather. This is exactly hurling bolts of thunder. This is exactly the highest level of emulation of the gods that humanity has yet dared to aspire to achieve. But it's all destructive. We can't emulate the gods of creation. We cannot emulate the gods of nature, of creating, giving birth to completely new life forms. That is our true nature. Our true nature is not to emulate those gods, but to live in harmony on the true path of the Great Spirit, where we're supposed to be the caretakers and gardeners of Mother Earth and the Kaitiakis, the guardians of our family of life. We're supposed to love them and nurture them, not kill them and burn them up. We're not even supposed to have domesticated them. So I'll just end up with something I've talked about on probably about 80% of every On the Brink radio show. The message of the Hopi prophecy and of the elder Thomas Bunyakya, who I met at Big Mountain, when he said that we can't avert the day of purification, but we can hope to lessen its severity through the summation of all our good works and actions on behalf of life and stopping doing all the destructive things. Every little thing we can do does matter. It matters from a spiritual and teleological perspective even more than it does from the tangible, real-world, physical perspective, because everything we can do on behalf of life to lessen the severity of the purification, his words have haunted me, because what it means is lessening the severity means lessening the impact on all the non-human kingdoms of life who are already suffering so astronomically immensely right now and always have been, but now more than ever with this vicious blitzkrieg of geophysical warfare attack in Australia that's just getting going. I mean, it's not even over. And it's like to lessen the severity of whatever Mother Earth and the Great Spirit has to do to get rid of global military industrial civilization, which is going to be horrific. I believe, as I've said countless times before, I think it's going to come in the form of a comet or asteroid impact. So it's going to take us out, and it's probably going to come from nowhere. And that's why I've done a really interesting interview with astronomer and comet researcher Duncan Steele that's going to be an upcoming show. I know him as the comet and asteroid guy, and he was colleagues with some of my friends in Australia, Malcolm Hartley and Fred Watson, who are comet researchers and astronomers there. But he did a lot of work about 25 years ago on threats from comets and asteroids, and I think that that is looming now more than ever because of the, you know, you can look at it from a physical perspective with all the geophysical warfare stuff and things like Project Argus that happened in 1958 where they detonated nuclear weapons in the ionosphere, just damaged the Van Allen radiation belts. And so all this kind of stuff's been going on even more and more and more with the dawn of HARP and all the other ionospheric heaters like the Chinese one in Antarctica, in Iskett in Norway, all the ones, Jindali, Jorn in Australia and Exmouth and in Russia and all over, probably hundreds of them. Unbelievable stuff that we're doing, not only to the Earth, but to the heliocosm, to Earth's relationship with the solar wind and how we, the Earth, processes the energies from the sun. And the solar tap, the idea that Walter Richman talked about in his book, The New Millennium, I think what's really going on is even beyond all this. And so we may not see it or experience it directly, but we're seeing the effects of it. And so we might be manipulating Earth's ability to deflect incoming bodies with which impacts or close encounters could have very harmful consequences for life on Earth. Anyway, I'd like to ask everybody to please send as much prayers and love for all the life forms in Australia as you can right now. All the people, the First Nations Australians, all the land forms, all the chakras in the body of the rainbow serpent. I'm doing a major painting right now, and I'm going to do a medicine wheel at my friend Cade's house in Takaka this coming week, drawing down all the most sacred healing energy from Mother Earth and the Dreamtime ancestors and the Native Americans and First Nations Australians, the Star Nations, the whales and dolphins, and all the kingdoms of life, all beings of love and truth and beauty, to create a beautiful sand painting for healing and to try to bring rain and to get this war to stop and for healing and to ease the pain and the suffering of all the life forms and all the people, all the marsupials, all the birds, all the reptiles, all the amphibians, all the insects, the arthropods and arachnids, the trees and the shrubs and the flowers and the vegetables and the fruits and nuts and seeds and berries and all the soil microbes and the fungi and the lichens and all the life forms and all the landscapes and everything. And please send beautiful prayers and blessings for all of life. And remember, live simply so that others may simply live. Walk in beauty on a path with a grateful heart that can be a magnet for miracles. What we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. Enjoy the rest of this broadcast as a sound collage of the sounds of a lot of my family of Australia. This is Jeff Phillips Wyferson signing off. Good day. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.